story come back when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Open the newest programs page and scroll down. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and free as podcast online. This is an unfunded program that depends entirely on donations by listeners. You can contact TUC Radio online at tucradio.org. The email is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening.
Joy of resistance. We're sisters of the joy of resistance.
Beyonce says she's a feminist, but many see the lyrics and imagery in her latest album as illustrations of subordination. And recently, renowned feminist bell hooks fanned the flames of the controversy by calling her a terrorist. On Wednesday, June 18th, from 9 to 10 p.m., join the Joy of Resistance as we explore this topic with co-founder of Real Colored Girls, Krista Bell, and women's and queer rights activist Nikita Slade. That's Wednesday, June 18th, from 9 to 10 p.m. And what did bell hooks mean by that anyway?
Together we have come along. Distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for The Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about The Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Okay.
World Peace and Prayer Day 2014 with Chief Orville Looking Horse takes place from June 19 to 22 at Bodwin Park in Wappingers Falls, New York. Also known as Honoring Sacred Sites Day, World Peace and Prayer Day brings together in prayer people of all races, ages, genders, nationalities, and faiths who share concern for the welfare of Mother Earth and humanity. Wisdom keepers, activists share spiritual insight and discuss important environmental concerns and cures, and artists will perform. All are welcome at no cost, but donations are greatly appreciated. Bodwin Park is within walking distance from the Metro North Hudson Line. For more information and a complete schedule, go to worldpeaceandprayerday.com or find them on Facebook at World Peace and Prayer Day 2014.
Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bon diddly-bo!
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by... Oh, there's so many people here. Makita. Okay, Kailima.
Hi.
All right. At least you know your Brazilian name. Fernando Santos. For some reason, that's Rob T. Firefly.
Hola.
I should have said I'm Emmanuel Gostito. That's my Brazilian soccer name. Uh-huh. And also joining us on the telephone, newfangled Comrex device is Incha. And I don't know, Bernie S., why Bernie S. translated to Incha, but that's who you are for the remainder of this show.
Incha sounds good. Hey, Emmanuel, I'm going to count up on my volume. I'm from one. Tell me where I sound best.
You need to practice.
One,
go ahead and count. So
two,
far, so good.
Three, four, five.
I want you to keep going.
Cinco.
See how bad.
Seis. Siete. Ocho. Nueve. Diez. So what was the best level?
One.
Really?
Well, it's best for me right now. Well, first of all, I'd say maybe about, four? What do you think?
Three and a half.
By the way, I also want to just Red Hack. And Red Hack, I'm sorry, I tried to put your name into the Brazilian name generator, and it doesn't understand how to do that for your name. That's the only one it failed for.
Well, too many consonants near each other, probably.
It's also, Red Hack is not really a word.
That's also true.
Yeah, whereas every other name is technically a word. But I hope everybody has remembered their names, and if there's a name you'd like me to input, I can try that right now as we have the app up.
Do we have to do the whole show in Portuguese?
No, we don't have to do that, but you do have to remember your name, Makita.
I don't think I can remember that.
Well, better get used to it.
What happens if you put in drop table?
It's a serious application, Rob. It's not, I'm sorry, or Fernando Santos. Why are you Fernando Santos? Why do you get a cool name like that? How does Rob T. Firefly turn into Fernando Santos?
Well, when the Firefly family came here from Brazil, they were, of course, the Fernando Santos family.
And then they changed it to an English sound.
Yeah, they were Americanized. It was very sad.
Kailima, what do you think?
I don't.
All right, good. That's probably best around here. Here we are, the merry band of off-the-hook people. And Red Hack, I should say, you're back from California. What brings you back here?
Just out here for... the week.
Okay. So. But you're going to be back out here in a month for
I
Hope.
Will be. Yeah.
Hope is coming up. In fact, this particular edition of Off the Hook, we're going to be focusing on some of the speaker summations we have released already. It's well over 70 now. Last week, I think it was 25. And we'll just keep chugging away at it. When we're done, it's going to be around 100. And the schedule is about to come out as well. So we've been pretty busy. And this conference is going to be pretty awesome. It drains the life out of us, but it's worth it, I guess, in the end, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah, Bernie, after a long nap.
Yeah, actually. Pretty much. So we have a lot of the talks that we've gotten. Of course, our keynote is Daniel Ellsberg, which is pretty amazing right there, the whistleblower of all whistleblowers. We also have NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake coming as well. We've got all kinds of talks about surveillance. I was going to read you a few titles here. Surveillance, Suvalence, and Anti-Surveillance. Those are artistic responses to watching. Just to read the summation of that one. It's impossible to imagine a world without surveillance. Its presence reflects a symbiotic relationship with the state and hegemony as a whole. For years, artists have been using surveillance and surveillance technologies to engage and disrupt the surveillance apparatus. And this talk will explore works by artists such as Stephen Mann, Banksy, the surveillance camera players, and many more working in the medium to answer the question of how are we to engage with a surveillance society. And that is what we live in today, folks, a surveillance society on so many levels. Bernie, you've been on the speaker committee. You've noticed a bunch of these surveillance-themed talks that we've gotten this particular time around.
Well, it seems to be the subject of the day, not of the day, of the year, of the era. So naturally, with Hope being on top of what's going on at any given moment, every time we do Hope, we follow what people really care about, which is surveillance and privacy and anonymity, and all those things connected with it. So yes, we will be having a lot of speakers talk about all these various aspects of this topic, and there's nowhere you're going to get this much information on this kind of stuff than Hope. That's for sure.
That's very true. And I was just very amazed at how the community has grown over the decades where, you know, in the past, we would have a lot of fun talks on just hacking in general. But it's gotten so much bigger than that over the years and through all the earth-shattering newspaper headlines, not just about hackers getting into your computer account, which is utter nonsense, but things about surveillance, things about privacy. Things that hackers understand, and hackers are the people that reveal this information. They are indeed whistleblowers by default. So it's just incredible to me to see the community basically coming together and having all of these conversations and talks and presentations that focus on that topic primarily. But there are all kinds of other things as well, all sorts of technical talks, non-technical talks, artistic, social, mischievous, you name it. It's all going to be there. And that's just the talks. Those are just the talks that we're having. We have all kinds of workshops. Bernie, I know you've been working on workshops. Anything you care to share with us?
Oh, well, we've Mitch and I have been and a very able volunteer named Brian, who is from our Brazil as well, and speaks Portuguese, have all been on the vendor coordination team, and we've got well over a dozen workshops lined up. Some of them are follow-ups to talks. So if you come to a talk about a really interesting topic...
Uh-oh. Yeah?
Apparently.
That was a conditional statement that Bernie never finished. Bernie, are you with us?
Apparently it's so interesting that we don't... We can't hear about it.
Wow! See, this is what the NSA will go. They will stop at nothing to silence us. Well, if Bernie were here to finish that sentence, I think I don't know what he would have said. I can't imagine what he would have said.
I mean, so some of the talks have as you said, a workshop component. So if you want more information or a more hands-on experience about something that is talked about, then there will sometimes be an opportunity to do so.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sure he would have said it much better than that.
Probably would have. Is he going to reconnect to us? Do I have to do something? I've never had this
happen. We don't have to do anything. We have to wait for him to just hook back up.
Does he think he might not realize he's not on the air and is still talking now?
That's pretty likely.
Remember I did that once in Germany? I did almost a whole show on the phone thinking I was still connected because I didn't get any signal that I wasn't.
Still among our highest rated episodes, I think.
It was a good one, that's for sure. Well, by the way, okay, so we were talking about Mitch Altman, and I just wanted to generate his Brazilian name. And it turns out, as it's being generated live, he would be cert error number 3174921. How is that possible?
What is the algorithm that this thing
uses?
I don't know now.
Cert error? Really? That's what Mitch Altman translates to. Well, that's a good one. Doesn't sound very, very Brazilian, but yeah, okay. We have, before we get back into some Hope talks and other things Hope related, Bernie, are you back?
Yeah, I'm very sorry. My microphone cut out. I don't know where I was talking about workshops. Did you hear any of that?
Well, you got to the comma in the statement.
Okay. Well, I was just saying we have well over a dozen workshops and more to come. But what's interesting is to me is several of the workshops pertain to talks. Like if you come to a talk or a panel discussion, there may be a workshop following explaining. You know, where you can get your hands on, like if there's a talk about building something, then you can do a workshop after that and actually build that thing. Or there's a couple of workshops about Freedom of Information Act requests. Mike Radvinsky, who had given a workshop on this 2 years ago at Hope Number 9, will be giving introductory FOIA and advanced FOIA, which FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests, are used very heavily by ACLU and Electronic Frontier Foundation and other groups to really dig out and get information about what our government is keeping secret from us. And you'll learn how to do this on your own, and the Advanced FOIA workshop will tell you how to do it without having to pay a lot of really expensive fees that the government tries to impose to keep you from filing these FOIA requests. So I highly recommend that as well.
There are an immense number of talks where you'll learn things like that about freedom of information, about what the government might be storing about you. about ways that you can get around certain restrictions and other things like that. There's an amazing panel called Ask the EFF this year on the internet, and that one is basically summed up by saying, hear from lawyers, activists, technologists, international policy analysts from the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, the nation's premier digital civil liberties group fighting for freedom and privacy in the computer age. And basically, there'll be updates on all kinds of issues, like the efforts to end mass spying, both here and abroad, the fight against the use of intellectual property claims, rather, to shut down free speech and halt innovation. That's pretty scary in and of itself. You could probably fill an hour just listing some examples of that. There'll be a discussion of their technology projects to protect privacy and speech online, updates on their cases against the NSA. They have multiple cases against the NSA, and just all kinds of things like that. Your opportunity to actually ask the people in the front lines what's up and what they're doing and how you can help. You can see the entire listing so far. It's not complete by any stretch of the imagination at x.hope.net. And just click on schedule, and you'll see what we have so far. It's really impressive. I got to say, it's a lot of fun.
You know, when you gave these papers to those of us in the studio to review and pick a favorite talk, it's really difficult because I just looked at one talk and I was like, oh, I should talk about that one. It's Jason Scott. Jason Scott is always fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the next page and I realized that
wait, you're just going to stop there? Jason Scott, he's always fascinating.
Yeah, because
say more about
because
him?
Everyone should know that Jason Scott is fascinating. We've had them on the show. The blurb is on the website, but this talk that I want to talk in slightly more depth was a bit more controversial when we discussed it on the speaker decision process, and it's Jennifer Ortiz who will be giving a talk entitled Bringing Down the Biological System, How Poisons Hack the Body. And I think you will not get this kind of information at this kind of level at any technical conference except HOPE and maybe some like actual pharmacology conferences.
She gives really good talks. She's spoken at the last two conferences as well, and she's just really into chemistry and experiments and explaining it all, and it's you learn so much from that. And that's just, yeah, exactly. That's just one talk of...
Emmanuel.
Yes.
Go ahead, Brian. Want to point out, this is not a talk about... how to harm people with poisons. It's about how poisons work, and there are poisons all around us in stuff we ingest or are exposed to in the air. And this talk is sort of off the beaten path for HOPE, but it's really about sort of hacking the body, which is one of the most amazing systems ever invented or created, and how it's sort of applying the thoughts of how, you know, malware and things like that affect computers, how different toxins and chemicals affect the human body. So I think this is really topical, and it's going to be really interesting.
It certainly will be. And
there's information about antidotes as well. So
there, yeah,
antidotes and anecdotes.
Probably. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of anecdotes, there's one talk I'm particularly interested in, and that's it sounds pretty incredible in and of itself, hang on, I'm trying to access our own website here, and it's called Rickrolling Your Neighbors with Google Chromecast. Now, come on, this is nothing but fun. Take control over your neighbors' TVs like in the movies. Do they do that in the movies? I mean, I know we do that in our own circle of friends. We take control, but I guess, you know, maybe in some movies they do that. The Google Chromecast is a handy little gadget that lets you stream video to your TV from a variety of sources like Netflix and YouTube. It also happens to allow streaming from nearby hackers. this talk will demonstrate how to hijack any Google Chromecast, even if it's behind a secure Wi-Fi network. Yeah, it'll then do your bidding. A new tool will also be released to fully automate the hijacking and playing of arbitrary video to the victim's TV. Let the prank wars commence. I hit the wrong button. Sorry. Didn't mean to do that. Okay. You got to be careful. You got to be really, really careful with these things. But one of very many talks. Kyle, you look like you have a favorite.
Yeah, I'm reading.
I'm sorry. I said your name wrong, didn't I? Hang on. Where's the piece of paper that has your real name? Kai Limo. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to mention this one from Devian Olam. It's elevator hacking from the pit to the penthouse.
Okay.
Sounds really interesting. And
elevator hacking. That whole panel on elevator hacking.
What does that mean?
Just elevators. I guess...
Like literal physical elevators that they have in buildings.
Yeah, like, I think you would call it a lift if you're in the UK. But yeah, basically in-depth explanation of how elevators work, allowing for greater understanding, system optimization, and the subversion of security in many facilities. Those who attend will learn why an elevator is virtually no different than a staircase, as far as building security is concerned.
Fascinating. Very fascinating. There's something I'd like to focus on. Not that. I'm sorry. Wrong thing again. This is a dial tone, and we're going to call a number. Actually, let me first explain this a little bit. This is about recruiter spam. You guys know what recruiter spam is, right? It's basically when somebody calls you at work, and Rob, I think you understand it, right? What is it they want? I never pick up the phone, so I never know what people are trying to get me to do. But a recruiter calls and they're trying to hire people away from your company. Is that what they're doing?
Something like that, as I understand it, they're trying to hire people away from your company, trying to fill or trying to get people to work at your company. And you know, what positions have you got open? We've got people to fit the positions. We've got positions to fit the people. But it's very often just something that they do uninvited and in a spammy manner.
Now, according to this website called 42floors.com, they say they're bombarded daily with spam calls and emails from recruiting companies. Most of these we just ignore, but some bad actors decide to contact every person on the engineering team, including calling our mobile numbers, and that is just unacceptable. So it's time to strike back, and what they've done is they've come up with a phone number, and we're going to call that number right now. Except I can't hit the... Oh, there we go. You have to press really hard on these buttons to get them to work. We are entering the 1990s here at WBAI, folks. Okay, hopefully that worked. And we're going to call this recruiter guy.
To ensure the highest quality service, this call may be monitored and recorded.
Hi, this is Derek. How can I help you?
Hi, Derek. It's Emmanuel over at Off the Hook. Are you there?
And which company did you say you're with?
I said I'm with Off the Hook, you big fat idiot.
Okay, great. This is actually pretty good timing. We have several technical positions that we're in the process of trying to fill right now. So probably the easiest thing to do would be for me to give you details about each one of those positions.
And then he goes on for a good 15 minutes just rattling off all kinds of boring job openings that the person calling you might be interested in. And then after 15 minutes, it just loops and starts all over again. So if you want to get even with some of these people, this is the number to call. Area code 415-534-6560.
To be clear, this is the number that you give them to call.
Yes.
And tell them it's your HR department, and so they call this guy who is a recording and waste their time.
Well, you could transfer them, too.
You could do that as well.
You could transfer them. So in case anyone is interested, though, in some of the jobs being offered here, we'll leave him on for the entire show. Is that okay? Everyone objects?
This reminds me of another phone number that came out recently, which plays quotes from Bell Hooks, who's, of course, a well-known feminist, so you can give to people who are hitting on you that you don't want to talk to.
Oh, wow.
And that number is 669-221-6251, and it responds to both voice calls and texts, so it's very useful.
So you could get harassed by a robotic text. If you text it, it'll text you back.
I mean, I texted it to test it, and I didn't feel harassed. But
well, now you're on a list by doing that.
What kind of list?
A list of people that would call a sexist line or something. I don't know.
A list of people who want Bell Hooks quotes. That's a list of.
Oh, they're just quotes. That's all. It is just quotes. It's not a conversation like this.
No.
All right.
It's a little less advanced.
Wait. Hold on. I want
our back-end interns and other members of the team that concentrate on areas outside of the back-end.
Okay, never mind. I thought it was something else. That's a little bit of public service for you right there. What else? We have some news updates as well. Apparently there's this actually is a couple of weeks old. We were stuck in fundraising mode for the past however long that was. This story came out a couple of weeks ago about a huge new Edward Snowden leak. and no one knew where it came from. The Register published a story containing explosive above top secret information. That's a phrase, above top secret information about Britain's surveillance programs, including details of a clandestine British base tapping underseas cables in the Middle East. Reporter Duncan Campbell, who wrote the story, said it was based on documents leaked by fugitive NSA sysadmin Edward Snowden that other news outlets had declined to publish. However, it's not necessarily clear how Campbell got his hands on Snowden's document stash. Glenn Greenwald, who published the first stories based on Snowden's documents in The Guardian, said to Business Insider that Snowden has no source relationship with Campbell. He never provided documents to him directly or indirectly, as Snowden has made clear. I can engage in informed speculation about how Duncan got this document. It's certainly a document that several people in The Guardian UK possessed, but how he got it is something only he can answer. So it's kind of interesting that there are now Snowden leaks being leaked that we can't really figure out how that happened. The story just keeps on giving. What's that, Bernie?
Meta leaks.
Yes, absolutely.
Leaks of leaks.
And I guess we'll just see more and more things like this. Now, the other story that I think we really should be focusing on is the issue of net neutrality. We've been talking about this forever. And the issue seems to be coming to a bit of a head. There's lots of talk about it in various places, but the comment period is now open on the FCC website. In fact, the FCC website has crashed under the load of net neutrality commenters. Crashed pretty hard about a week or so ago after the agency was overwhelmed with users commenting on their net neutrality proceeding. Some people think it was because of John Oliver and his rant about it. If you haven't seen that, look at Kyle, you were playing it loud the other day. Where'd you find it?
It's on YouTube, and it's just search John Oliver net neutrality. But
okay.
I actually was inspired to go and look at the comment site, and I think they have when I first looked, they had about 120,000, and a day later, it was like 6,000 more, and that's far and away more comments than they've had on a lot of the other issues up there on the comment site. So just in a day, like 6,000-7,000 more comments were added to this already huge listing of comments.
Well, I'm looking at their website right now, and or actually a little while ago. Protecting and promoting the open internet is the title that that you can leave your comments on. They have 126,818 comments so far. You know, that is a lot, but in our world of millions and billions, it doesn't sound like a lot. You know, when Justin Bieber can belch on YouTube and get a million hits right away, but it is a lot. When you compare it to other things on the FCC website, the second closest to the 126,000 is 16,000, and the third is 4,000, and it just keeps plummeting down from there. So 126,000 comments, and I assume they're comments, well-worded comments, that's going to mean something. And you can be a part of this by going to www.fcc.gov/comments and make sure you you comment as to why net neutrality is important. Red Hack.
Yeah, and the difference between that and some random, you know, comment on the internet is that somebody probably has to read all of these.
That's true too.
Because they actually have to review all the comments on the proposal.
In fact, it's a civil servant's job to read all of those.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Barney.
I wanted to point out that people really should have an incentive to make their comments to this notice of proposed rulemaking by the FCC, because the cable industry has been caught astroturfing these comments. And I think there's a story about that, or maybe somebody there in the studio has a comment.
Oh, boy. See, every time he's about to make a point. Well, you back, Bernie?
The
drones are getting him. Listen to this. This is awful.
How about now?
It's a little better, but maybe if you stick your head out the window or something, at least we could hear you through the air.
Bad area. I should stand up on the roof. Can you hear me now?
You're in a bad time is what you're in. All right. Well,
anyway, yeah. Did you hear what I was saying about the astroturfing?
Yes, we did. Why don't you explain the term astroturfing to people who might not know what that means?
Well, astroturf is like what they use on football fields. It's pretend. It's fake grass. So it's sort of like a play on the grassroots sort of thing, like a grassroots movement. People sometimes...
So it's like a big company pretending to be grassroots when they're not.
Exactly. A big company will try to say this is a grassroots movement, but it's really astroturf. It's fake. It's plastic. comments from fake people.
Bernie, I think what you're doing right now is you're demonstrating what could happen to our connectivity if we don't play the game that they're trying to force down our throats. Basically, they call it the fast lane of the internet. Like, you could pay extra for the fast lane, or you can just be on the regular lane. And if you're going to be in the regular lane, you're going to sound like crap. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
but
have very slow speeds.
And what I'm saying, Emmanuel, is that people really need to put their comments website through WBAI.org on this, because they're going to have to compete against the astroturfing from the cable TV industry, which is saying, from the cable industry and the other ISPs that are saying, well, we don't want net neutrality because it'll affect our business model and whatever, and we want to be able to charge more for you to access certain parts of the internet. So if you care about this, and you really should care about this, everybody listening should care about this, because this is about freedom of information and who's going to control the information you have access to. Go to the WBA.org website and follow the link to put your comments into the FCC's website on this.
Or just go to fcc.gov/comments. You can do that, too. What I really recommend is that people listen to John Oliver's tirade on this, because if you're not motivated before that, you will be motivated after listening to that. And one of the things he says, which I really agree with, is that this has to not be boring. There are so many people out there that are trying to explain this and putting people to sleep. And I think that does more to turn people off to actually fighting the battles than anything that the opposition is doing. So by all means, get involved, get angry, get informed.
I mean, not to stray too far from the actual importance of the issue, but as a result of John Oliver's bit, apparently the head of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, has now officially denied being a dingo, which is nice.
Well, that's a start. That's a little bit of a progress there. Okay, what else do we have? This is interesting. Basically, there is a computer program out there that addresses changes to Supreme Court opinions. I'm going to read this piece that appeared on a website over the last few days. Okay, I'm sorry. I should have read this a little bit more carefully. It's all the kinds of links and things I can't really read on the air. But last week, this guy, who I'm not sure who they're referring to, I think it's Adam Liptak, I believe, or maybe he wrote about it, launched SCOTUS Servo, a Twitter account that SCOTUS_SERVO. It alerts followers whenever a change is made to a Supreme Court opinion. The process is fairly simple. The guy who wrote this actually is named David Zvenyak. And he explained in a phone interview, it uses something called Node. That's an application written in JavaScript to crawl the slip opinions posted to the Supreme Court website. Now, if the application, which performs a crawl every 5 minutes, detects a change, it notifies the automated Twitter account, which then tweets out an alert. Now, I'm not sure what kind of changes are being made to Supreme Court decisions, other than maybe spelling corrections or things like that, but it sounds awfully Orwellian if they can go back and change the wording of opinions. Is there evidence that this has actually been done?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that's crazy that has been in the news a bit recently. Most of the changes are just spelling or commas or whatever, but apparently sometimes even years after the opinion comes out, they'll make fairly substantial revisions to the opinions, and they don't, you know, they don't post an errata or a change log or anything like that. They just go back and change the opinion, and that's now the word of the Supreme Court. People may be familiar with a thing called news diffs, which does the same thing for the New York Times and maybe some other popular websites where they change the news stories as time progresses. I didn't realize that the Supreme Court changed their opinions also, but now we know, and now there's a service to track them.
Does this mean then that the opinions are not a matter that's recorded somewhere on paper? I mean, I would have imagined, right, that when opinion is published, that they, as old school as it is, they print it up and put it, you know, say in the Library of Congress or whatever. But it sounds like that, you know, when the digital form can be altered. And I'm curious then what happens to the archival records.
Well, there's a guy.
Or is that the only thing that exists these days?
There's a guy who works at a desk, and he's got this little hole that goes into a fire thing, and he throws it in there and then replaces it with a new one.
Right.
My understanding is that the Supreme Court works very slowly, so people read the opinions when they're published online because they don't want to wait. You know, they don't need to wait 5 years for it to come out in book form. Mm. But in that intervening time, occasionally changes are made.
But think of this, the Supreme Court is the highest example. Think of this on lower levels. Think of local government. Think of speeches and things from fairly low officials and moderate officials. And you see the danger here, because who's tracking all that? We have to pretty much be watching everything and keeping track of what might be changed sneakily.
Revising history.
Revising history, yeah. It's what every dictator wants. It's what every leader wants, actually.
The Internet Archive, Emmanuel, of course, can do some of this, but it's good to have an automated thing for specific cases like this.
Bernie?
Emmanuel. This reminds me of, you remember the stories decades ago about the Soviet Union and how their textbooks and other books would just change, like there'd like be a photograph of somebody who's missing, a photograph, and then in the next revision of the book, this person be missing because they're no longer in power, or just complete rewriting of facts, and you know, we just thought that was just crazy that could happen. Well, of course, it's the Soviet Union, but it's happening here in the United States, where the Supreme Court is substantially changing their opinions without telling anybody. And this is the highest court of this is the highest law of the land that is being changed under our noses. So I think this app is great. That is I don't know if it's an app, but this tool is great in that it's tweeting out things, and it might provide it. It might actually have a chilling effect on the court revising these opinions after the fact if they know that it's going to be publicized in real time. I like this a lot.
It just goes to show the power of Twitter, things you can do if you just use a little imagination. Kyle, you have another talk for us?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this one looks really interesting. It's called Ergonomic Human Interface Hacking. And I really like this because, I mean, a lot of people use touchscreens now, right? It's pretty popular to, if your iPhone or whatever has touch-sensitive stuff, that's pretty much how you type, how you click, or, you know, whatever you do, whatever you call up on your phone. But this one talks about sort of the history and stuff like that, and it says, do you experience numbness or weakness in your hands? You have a permanent case of Emacs pinky. I don't know what that is.
Emacs pinky, wow.
Yeah, are you playing VI golf for your health? I think I've played that before. Since the release of the Macintosh, mainstream human-computer interfaces have changed little, and hardcore computer users are paying the price. This talk will examine potential solutions to the repetitive strain injuries commonly experienced by computer users, including neat things like head-based cursor control, ultra-ergo keyboards, not ego keyboards, and foot pedals and other kinds of optimizations. This is kind of a cousin of, I think, haptics, which is, different forms of therapeutic use of a computer. But this is kind of the opposite, like not injuring yourself in the first place or not having the right equipment to prevent injuries. So this could be really cool because I think a lot of people still use older systems and are doing it wrong.
Well, I happen to use VI, and I know you use VI as well, and I don't know how to play VI golf, and I'd like to know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's actually like... never mind. Anyway.
Well, VI is an editor. It's a text-based editor, and it's pretty awesome.
Sometimes.
It can do everything you want to do.
You'll just have to go and see the talk and find out what it is.
All right, I think
to... I'm intrigued by that one. Now, another one that looks kind of cool is Crypto for Makers, Projects for the BeagleBone, Pi, and AVRs. Those are microcontroller variants. And computers these days. But it says, as more devices join the Internet of Things, it is increasingly important that these devices remain protected from surveillance and compromise. This talk will show how to add specialized commercially available crypto-integrated circuits to improve the security of your BeagleBone, your Pi, or other AVR-based platform. Integrated circuits such as the Trusted Platform module, the I2C authentication chips, and hardware random number generators will be discussed. The Crypto Cape, an open source hardware daughterboard made in collaboration with SparkFun and the presenter, will be presented in detail. They'll also describe running a Tor relay over a BeagleBone Black for quite a long time. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with microcontrollers, and now people are saying, hey, if I'm going to make this thing and it's going to be out there on the internet as a thing doing a thing, then maybe it should be cryptographically secure, or at least I should consider that.
I don't know if we've mentioned that the Hope Conference is taking place next month at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City. Probably haven't mentioned that fact. July 18th, 19th, and 20th. And you can register, get all kinds of information at x.hope.net. do so before it fills up, because we're getting a lot of response and just we have so many incredible talks and so many incredible surprises, which we'll be getting to in the future. Red Hacked.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that talk. Kailita, whatever it is, was talking about, which was that, you know, as we've seen now with all of these leaks, it's obvious that anything that's not encrypted on the internet is open to snooping by the NSA and other government surveillance groups. And so, yes, with this explosion of kind of home circuits and things that makers are making, and even commercial products that use these chips, you know, it's important. The thing about crypto is that, you know, there is some overhead that happens, and that generally these microcontrollers are incapable of supporting that extra overhead to do the crypto, which is why then you would have custom purpose chips for them to make it easier for them. But yeah, that sounds really interesting, because that's the kind of thing that if you have something and you're putting it on the internet, which people like to do nowadays, and it's important to makers, then securing that is really important. So.
Right, you don't want your microcontroller Christmas lights to then become a vulnerability for your house because it's on the internet.
Yeah, one of the things I really love about Hope, I've loved it as an attendee, as a staff member, everything is just how many things, how many talks I've seen, and how many talks I'm seeing now on the current conference that just take the hacker mindset and point it in all sorts of other unexpected directions. I mean, in the past we've had talks on, you know, hacking food, hacking sex, hacking all sorts of things, and now we've got hacking elevators, hacking your neighbor's TV.
Oh, I got one for you, Rob. How about biohacking?
Biohacking,
you know, there's a bunch of Canadian hackers coming down to show us what they're doing with biohacking. It's called Biohacking and DIY Biology North of the 45th Parallel. That's just so awesome in the title itself. But if you read the whole description, there's no way you want to miss that.
Yeah, and just the variety of stuff that we've got going on. It's not, it's not all sort of the, computers, phones, security, data, all this, you know, hard sort of Hollywood-friendly hacker subjects. It's basically applying the hacker mindset to all sorts of other aspects of our lives and how we can do that. And there really is no limit to how awesome that stuff can be.
That's right. Now, we mentioned that these are the talks. We have about 100 talks that we'll be presenting in total over the 3 days. Probably more if you count the unscheduled track and what goes on in workshops and things like that. But there is more than just the talks. Now, Kyle, I know you've been working on network stuff in addition, which is always fun and a challenge.
Yeah.
Anything you want to share about that?
Oh, man.
we only have a few minutes. So.
There's always a lot of interest, and we always have had network in the past. It's very common at these kinds of events. So we're going to have, an internal network and an uplink of sorts so that people can get out to the internet. And, we are still accepting, sponsorships and donations. Anybody who's got gear, definitely, wireless stuff. We could always use more access points because there's a lot of wireless devices now. We'll have accommodations. If you want to bring your server or your mini computer or your abacus or whatever, we'll be able to lock it up for you and give you an IP and do those sorts of things. We'll give some more details as they come about. But we really are, we're getting it down as far as design, and it will be substantial and evolution of what we've had in the past. But as we find out what exactly, where we're in need of some more supplies, we'll definitely be speaking about that and see if anybody else wants to be a part of our network.
And you mentioned sponsorship. I should step in and just say a couple words about that because of the really, really bad timing of something that has happened to us at the magazine with our biggest distributor basically absconding so far with a lot of money they owe us. They shut their doors, fired all their employees, but they are not out of business, and we are trying to get them to pay us. But if they don't pay us, then we pretty much have to we have to do all kinds of horrible things to get the funds we need to get various necessities at Hope. So we are looking for people or entities that would like to sponsor us. But let me just point out, this is not a corporate conference. We're not going to have big Microsoft banners or things like that, or make it seem as if companies or governments or all kinds of other things are running this. This is a hacker conference. It always will be. But In the past, we have had organizations and companies help us with all kinds of things, from bandwidth to supply of hardware, and that kind of thing can fit in. And in this particular case, in this particular year, with this horrible bad timing with our distributor problems, it might be a necessity. It might be the only way we can pull this off. We're hackers. We figure things out. We will make this happen one way or another. This is a challenge that's being thrown right at us, and it's particularly difficult, but we're going to meet that challenge one way or another.
Can I just mention one thing about this in general? I would say it's not easy. This is hard. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
We're not. We're building up our own infrastructure for more stuff in the future, but getting even accepting help from different entities or organizations, it's hard to get everybody in agreement. I mean, we don't have like paid people that sit around and work just on this. We have to kind of delegate and get everybody who is available on top of something if somebody wants to help. And it's a real rodeo sometimes just to get stuff that people are offering set up and available, let alone the things that we don't have resources for. So we're really hopeful and excited about doing what we can, but we always need a little more organization, a little more help, and especially putting together things like an ISP for thousands of people, or just generally paying for things that are extra fun, and things maybe we haven't tried before, stuff like that. So we definitely could use help.
Yeah. As a reminder, HOPE is really a volunteer-driven conference. I mean, really, we rely on volunteers. All of the core staff are volunteers. And so, you know, along these lines, if you can volunteer something to help with this particular need with the network, or, you know, even if you... When you come to the conference, volunteer to help with all of the different positions that are available there. You know, there's always things like the info desk and...
What's it called? There's a step beyond volunteer where you actually are paying to volunteer. That's where we're at right now. We're actually dipping into savings to pay for this thing. It's ridiculous, but we love doing it. And yeah, we could become a big corporate entity and charge thousands of dollars and have all the big companies there represented and make a mint. But I think we'd lose something precious and unique and something we've been doing since 1994, the very first conference. So hopefully, you know, if we can get through this one, I think we can get through just about anything.
So if you can volunteer now, please volunteer now. And if volunteers, you volunteer at the conference, please volunteer at the conference.
Volunteers at hope.net is the address. And also, if you're interested in sponsorship, sponsors@hope.net is an address that you can use for that.
Yeah, and if you know people in the industry or you have some contacts or you're curious about maybe how your organization could help, if you're part of a peering company or a major ISP or somebody who's got resources in the street out there, we would definitely like to speak with you, and I'd be happy to share some more details about what we're doing technically and what we hope to do. We would like to increase some of our speeds and our capacity, both internally and insofar as how we communicate with the rest of the internet.
Now, Bernie, I know you've been doing some work with securing some vendors for us. I don't know if there's any vendor tables left, but is there anything you want to share about that?
Not many. I mean, some of our vendors are buying 2 and 3 tables. So, you know, we have 23 vendor tables. We don't want this to be like a giant trade show. This is just a small area in part of HOPE where people who have very specific products and services that are of interest to the hacker community can vend during HOPE. And a lot of people come to HOPE with money to spend while they happen to be in New York City. But there's also really cool hackerish things they can buy while they're at the conference. So this is not a commercial conference, but people who are interested in vending their product or service, they can send an inquiry to vendors@hope.net. I think we only have a handful of tables left. So if you're interested in that, please contact us. Thank you for giving out the email address sponsors@hope.net, because that's what was one of my questions was. And I have a favorite talk that I would like to talk about. Can I mention that real quick?
Yes, but please let me also just point out that if you are applying to be a vendor, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, but we do have standards, okay? And we don't accept everybody who wants to be a vendor. For instance, unlike some conferences, we would not have an NSA recruiting table at HOPE. I don't think that is something we would ever do. But, you know, we're not that desperate. I don't think we are that desperate. But there are plenty of really, really good organizations, people, products even, that I think our audience would benefit from. Go ahead, Bernie. What is the talk that you want to highlight?
Oh, one of the topics that listeners on Off the Hook seem to be, and BAI really happen to be interested in a lot over the years, is mobile phone, cell phone surveillance and being tracked on your cell phone. Our friend Matt Blaze, who's one of the key volunteers for HopeX, has a talk called Geolocation, Location, Location, Technology and Countermeasures for Mobile Location Surveillance. And he's going to talk. We all know that law enforcement and private companies, they can track you through your mobile phone, but he's going to explain how this tracking actually works, how precise it is, when can they get this information from your phone, is there anything you can do to obscure your movements without, like, putting yourself inside what's called a Faraday cage. He's going to go into the technical stuff, like what various and nuts and bolts stuff, what you can do to help prevent the powers that be from surveilling you through your cell phone. Matt really knows what he's talking about. He's a PhD professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and this is his topic. This is what he knows about. So this is one of the 100 or so talks that will be at HOPE this year, HOPEX, that you really can't miss. It's good stuff.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? We have a little bit of time. Let's take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. Please, though, I have not seen the Spain game, so don't tell me anything about whether or not they made it through. 212-209-2900. If questions about the HOPE conference or hacking in general, privacy, surveillance, all that kind of stuff. Our email address here at Off the Hook is oth@2600.com. We love hearing from our listeners, especially when they have something interesting to say. But even when they don't, we still love hearing from them. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. I have a question. Sprint bought out Nextel a while ago, and with my Nextel phone, I was able to get phone calls in my cabin in the mountains in Colorado. Once they bought Nextel out, they shut the towers down. I have no phone service. Now they're going to buy another company, and I'm trying, T-Mobile, I believe, and I'm trying to find out who to complain to because, you know, this isn't right what they do.
I agree. Bernie, I think you were affected by this, were you not?
Well, I was not a Nextel subscriber, but the so-called iDEN technology that the Nextel network used was shut down by Sprint several years after they made the poor decision to buy it in the first place. They're completely incompatible networks, the Nextel iDEN network and Sprint's CDMA network.
And Sprint's CDMA network is completely incompatible with T-Mobile's GSM network.
Exactly. So I don't know what – well, of course, everything's moving over to LTE now, so it may be a better merger this time around. Who knows? But it won't be a good move for the consumers.
I just got to say, though, I've been both a Sprint customer and a T-Mobile customer, and I've been very happy with what T-Mobile has done recently as far as making it simple, lowering prices. Just went over to Europe and have not had any shocks to my system for using data all the time I was over there and making phone calls and sending texts. And I remember when I was a Sprint customer, every month would be something unpleasant. And it got to the point where they were demanding payment before the bill was even sent. A lot of unpleasant memories with Sprint, and I would dread them taking over.
What's happening, though, is just announcement came out this week that the name of the new company, should Sprint merge with T-Mobile, the name of the new company will be T-Mobile. So the Sprint brand will go away. Whether all of Sprint's policies will go away remains to be seen.
Do you remember a company called Sprint Spectrum?
Yes.
That was a GSM company that Sprint
ran. It was like the first GSM carrier in the U.S., really. It was Sprint's first. It was called Sprint Spectrum, and then they had this really funny advertising campaign. They sort of targeted their market to the credit-challenged people. But I remember they had a parrot promoting their product. But yeah, you were a subscriber for that, weren't you, for a while?
Uh-huh. Yes, a little bit. I try to subscribe to every phone company for a slight amount of time, just so I can learn how they work and how they don't work.
We're talking mid-90s. This is like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
To answer the caller's question, you can send a comment to the FCC or to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and ask them to block this merger. Maybe you'll succeed. I don't know.
These huge mergers tend to get blocked sometimes, and it's good to see, but your input definitely makes a big difference.
I read an analysis, and who knows if it's right, that there are this issue and the net neutrality issue, and there's a third one, the cable companies merger, and the FCC, I guess, according to this uninformed comment, the FCC doesn't want to stop them all because then they would just be in the pocket of the common person, which is something they just cannot appear to be. So we probably won't win on all the fronts, and who knows if we'll win on any. But maybe. It can't hurt to try.
All right. Again, our phone number is 212-209-2900, and oddly enough, our phone lines are wide open. But while they're wide open, maybe Kyle, you could explain what this sound, what this music is all about.
Sure. Yeah. So this is often heard at Chaos Communication Congress, and we want to do something like this for Hope. Basically, it's intermission music. And so if anyone out there is doing like music production independently and they would like to compose something, we would like to hear it. Because we want our own uniquely Hope pause music for intermission when people are coming and going. And the reason we'd like it to be original...
It's just so good, I keep wanting to turn it up.
The reason we'd like it to be original is because when we put talks online, if it's commercial music, it's going to be flagged by YouTube. That's a problem.
That is such a pain in the ass. I swear to God, we put up a video of somebody giving a great talk, and because there's 5 seconds of a song heard in the background, YouTube flags it, and we have to either edit it out or have a link to their advertising or something nasty like that. This enables us to bypass that if the music is not licensed to some big record company.
So please, anybody who does this kind of stuff, independent music production, come up with something, send it to us. I don't know a good address for this product.
Well, for now, you can send it to the radio station or the radio show address, since we haven't actually set up an email address. I don't know if we need an email address for this, but oth@2600.com. If you're a musician and you can come up with something that's not going to drive people insane if they hear it all the time. This never drove anybody insane.
Something atmospheric, something, I don't know, it can be electronic or acoustic, whatever. We'd like to get a bunch of submissions, and we want to pick something that's sort of copyright free or usable in a lot of contexts, because basically it'll be the bumps, the beginning and the end of any videos that we post online, and that's quite a bit of exposure. We'll give you credit where we can add it as far as comments and wherever is relevant. We'll
and
definitely
thousands
thank you.
Of people will be hearing this as they mill from one room to another. Will it be playing in all three rooms, or how do they do it? Do they have different music in different rooms, or the same music playing at different times in different rooms? I guess we can sort this out.
You can do whatever you want.
We can do whatever we want, but we'd like to come up with something like this that is uniquely ours and from our community. And something new, something that is specifically for Hope, and that we can use in at least the main room, if not others. And if there's a couple of different productions that work, we'll talk to our AV people, the people that help produce the actual event, and we'll use all of them that we really, 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 really like.
Yet another way to get involved in the Hackers on Planet Earth conference next month here in New York City. Bernie, what do you think of this? Can you hear it?
I think this is great. It's kind of like Brian Eno's Music for Airports, except this is music for hacker conferences.
That's good. Yeah, music for hacker conference. I think that's an album we should put out, Music for Hacker Conferences. Yeah, In fact, you know, we'll probably do a lot better with that than than the actual hacker conference itself, just putting out albums. Okay, you know what? I'm not sure we can take these phone calls. We're kind of out of time. The personal computer people are already at the door. But this is a great idea, though. This is something I would like to hear at HopeX, definitely. So write to us, oth@2600.com, if you're a musician, and you can supply us with something. It should be about 10 minutes long, I guess, and not have vocals and not have sounds like chalk on a blackboard that might drive people crazy or anything like that.
Yeah, because if we don't get anything usable beforehand, I'm going to have to go up on stage with my bagpipes, and that won't be good for anyone.
Yeah, that's always something that causes problems. Okay, our email address once again, oth@2600.com. We'll be back next week with more exciting information. Keep checking the Hope website, x.hope.net, for updates, and there will be updates. There'll be all kinds of updates and announcements and things like that. And we'll see you next time. Good night.
It's WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It's 8 p.m. here on June the 18th, 2014, and it is now Wednesday, so it's time for the Personal Computer Show. Here with Hank is here, Dave is here, Joe is not here. We're going to send the truant officers after him, but as we get on with the show, as we do.
Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is Hank Key, and with me this evening is Stevie DB in the studio. And you should see him. He has this head of hair on him, and he looks a little strange with all that hair on top of his head.
Really? I must have not shaved
it.
Yeah,
well, anyway. And we have joining us from the left coast, David Perry. How are you, David?
I'm pretty darn good. I can't complain, but it hasn't stopped me from complaining yet.
Well, you know, we were very happy to see you last week. You were in the studio with us, and it was very hard, in a sense, to really kind of look at you because I was saying, that's only half of David. Where's the other half?
Well, I left it behind me long ago.
Well, I think you feel healthier, too.
I do. I do. I feel a lot healthier as soon as my broken arm gets all better.
Stevie, are you queuing up the segment for us? Let me tell the audience what we're going to be doing, okay? I did a segment, and I just thought that it was time to do it again because there was some interest in it, or maybe quite a bit of interest in it, in Linux. And it's going to be an overview of Linux from 30,000 feet, or some may call it Linux 101. And these are my views. These are my editorial thoughts. And to quote Joe, who listened to it, he says, well, those are yours. I may say something different. I said, well, you're welcome to say something different.
Is that your Joe impersonation?
I'm trying to.
Okay.
Before we start, I know that David, I asked David to comment on the segment after it's done because, you know, we're talking about Linux now, and most people don't realize that it is, it's with us. A lot of people are saying, when is it ever going to be mainstream? It is mainstream, but in many ways, it's sort of like invisible. It's not like in your face. And one of the things that is a little confusing is, it's spelled L-I-N-U-X. And is it pronounced Linux or Linux? Well,
Linux.
It's according to Torvalds, who is responsible for the kernel, he calls it Linux. So guess what? We're going to call it Linux. And there's also another question here. Is it GNU Linux or is it Linux? Well, you could call it both ways because...
Linux.
What it is that the kernel is Linux. All the utilities with it is really almost all from GNU, which is Richard Stallman. But Richard Stallman is quite magnanimous about it. He says, look, name it after a guy who did the kernel. That's no problem at all. So, Stevie, it's all queued up now? He's got his finger up, and I don't know the finger. It means it's ready, or he's giving me that finger.
I'm ready when you are.
Hey. Okay. So here's a segment that I'm talking about, Linux. And, Stevie, take it away. Linux is over 20 years old. Will it ever gain mainstream operating system status? The answer is yes. It is relevant, and yes, it's already in the mainstream. In order to be a mainstream operating system, there needs to be a critical mass of users. The Google Chromebook operating system is Android. Android is an operating system based on the Linux kernel with a user interface based on direct manipulation designed primarily for touchscreen mobile devices such as smartphones and tablet computers. The operating system uses touch inputs that loosely corresponds to real-world actions like swiping, tapping, pinching, and reverse pinching to manipulate on-screen objects, and a virtual keyboard. Despite being primarily designed for touchscreen input, it also has been used in television, games, consoles, digital cameras, and other electronics. Last year, Android made up 61% of the tablet sales compared to 36% for Apple iOS. Last year, 21% of notebook sales were Chromebooks. What makes for Chromebook success? First, it's likely the price. Google's decision to freely license and distribute Chrome OS gives laptop manufacturers the opportunity to cut costs from their final product. This, in turn, can provide a powerful incentive for shoppers looking for a lower-cost laptop without breaking the piggy bank. In other words, it gives Chromebooks a better chance of undercutting Windows devices. There's also another major factor in the development and acceptance of Linux. Ubuntu Kylin has been formally adopted by the government of China. Ubuntu Kylin is the official Chinese version of the Ubuntu computer operating system. It has been described as a continuation of the Chinese Kylin operating system. In 2013, Canonical reached an agreement with Industry and Information Technology of the People's Republic of China to co-create and release a Ubuntu-based OS with features targeted at the Chinese market. Ubuntu Kylin is intended for desktop and laptop computers. The first official release, Ubuntu Kylin 13.04, was released April the 25th, 2013, on the same day as Ubuntu 13.04. Features include Chinese input methods, Chinese calendars, a weather indicator, and online music search from the dash. Future versions will include integration with Baidu Maps, Taobao shopping service, as well as a version of Office programs and image management tools. Canonical is also working with the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology on a version that will run on servers. Well, then what is Linux? is it an operating system? Linux is the kernel, the program in the system that allocates the machine resources to the other programs that you run. It functions as a traffic cop in a computer operation. The kernel is an essential part of an operating system, but useless by itself. It can only function in the context of a complete operating system. Then what makes up a Linux operating system? Linux is normally used in combination with GNU or BSD utilities. All the so-called Linux distributions are really distributions of one of these combinations. GNU is recursive, meaning GNU, not Unix. And BSD stands for Berkeley Software Distribution. Users often think that Linus Torvalds developed the whole operating system in 1991. Programmers generally know that Linux is a kernel, but since they have generally heard the whole system called Linux, they often name the whole system after the kernel. The GNU project was set out to develop a free Unix-like system. The GNU project started in the early 1980s as a replacement for Unix. Aside from GNU, one other project had independently produced a free Unix-like operating system. This system is known as BSD, and it was developed at UC Berkeley. In the case of GNU, Donald Knuth wrote a text formatter, Bob Schieffler wrote a Windows system, and Richard Stallman developed a number of widely used software components of GNU, including the original Emacs, the GNU compiler, the GNU symbolic debugger, and many other programs for GNU operating system. Torvalds developed Linux in 1992. It fit into the last major gap in the GNU system. People can then combine Linux with the GNU system to make a complete operating system. Is BSD a version of GNU? Taken as a whole, they are two different systems that evolve differently. Any major Linux distribution we know today are derivatives of three primary developments who have incorporated and integrated the Linux kernel and GNU utilities into a cohesive operating system. What were the major Linux development projects? Debian was one of the first software projects begun in 1993 by Ian Murdoch. Debian is pronounced Debian, and it derives from the names of Ian Murdoch and his wife Deborah. Debian's most distinguishing features are its software packaging method and method of installing and updating the software packages, including upgrading the entire distribution without a reboot. It has the most complete and comprehensive library of programs. Slackware, on the other hand, is minimalistic. It was created by Patrick Volkerding in late 1992 and initially released to the world on July 17, 1993. It was the first Linux distribution to achieve widespread use. Volkerding first learned of Linux when he needed an inexpensive Lisp interpreter for a project. One of the few distributions available at that time was SLS Linux from Software Landing System. Volkerding used SLS Linux, fixing bugs as he found them, and eventually he decided to merge all these bug fixes into his own private distribution that he and his friends could use. This private distribution quickly gained popularity, so Volkerding decided to call it Slackware and make it publicly available. Along the way, Patrick added new things to Slackware, a user-friendly installation program based on a menuing system, as well as the concept of package management, which allows users to easily add, remove, or upgrade software packages on their system. Slackware does not try to emulate Windows. It tries to be as Unix-like as possible. It does not try to cover processes with fancy point-and-click GUIs, and instead it puts users in control by letting them see exactly what's going on. Slackware is for people who enjoy learning and tweaking their system to do exactly what they want. Then we have Red Hat. A group of programmers in North Carolina packaged their distribution for commercial use in 1994. Instead of being a snapshot of a hard disk that had a working copy of Linux on it, or a set of diskettes from which different parts of the operating system could be dumped, this distribution was based on packages. Their goal was to make it easier for people to give Linux a try. Like many other such groups, their approach was to bundle all the necessary bits and pieces into a cohesive distribution, relieving the more esoteric aspects of bootstrapping a new operating system on their machine. So, what are the basic components of a Linux operating system? Well, one CD-ROM vendor found that in a typical Linux distribution, GNU software was the largest single component, about 28% of the total source code, and this included some of the essential major components without which there could be no system. The Linux kernel itself was 3%. That means that the whole packaging to put together an operating system is well over 50%. How many versions of Linux are available? Well, distrowatch.org lists well over 1,500 versions of Linux, but there are many more. Live distros can be downloaded readily to run. Well, what is a live distro? A live distro comes on a bootable CD-ROM, DVD-ROM, or USB drive, but is not installed automatically. It boots and runs Unix directly from the bootable media. Used for demonstration purposes or to evaluate how well the Linux version runs on a particular machine. The live distro typically does not alter any files on the hard disk or leave any data. However, if you use a USB drive, you can store data on that media. After the live distro disk is removed and the machine is turned off and back on, it boots back to its installed OS. Live distros typically have an option to install Linux as well. So when references are made to a Linux operating system, it is not a specific operating system. There are different versions of Linux. There are incompatibilities between the different versions. What they all have in common is the Linux kernel and the GNU utilities. Developers are required to integrate the Linux kernel, the GNU utilities, and add to it the other functions to make it an operating system. Well, Dave, that's my segment and one man's view on Linux, and may you want to add